We have spent the first hour talking college football. We spend the second hour talking National Football League, as we get set for the divisional round. Now, before we get there, Zoe, I want to get the doom and gloom out of the way for just a second. There is not entirely. There's a little bit of doom and gloom out of the NBA, and then we have some hopeful news coming out of the world of golf right now. Over in the NBA, according to a report that was filed earlier this afternoon by ESPN's Brian Windhorst and Zach Lowe, according to Brian Windhorst and Zach Lowe, the NBA is reporting now that they are seeing players who had tested positive for the coronavirus earlier in the year, dating back to last year's break in March and through the bubble down in Disney World in the fall of last year. They say they have seen now multiple players who tested positive once in the past for coronavirus, testing positive a second time. According to Windhorst and Lowe, the NBA has announced more than 100 positive tests since last summer, but the actual number since March is believed to be significantly higher. Several teams have had more than 10 players who have tested positive at some point over the last few months, according to this report from Windhorst and Lowe. Last night, we had two NBA games be postponed, including the New Orleans Pelicans and the Dallas Mavericks, because the Mavericks did not have the league-mandated minimum number of players, 8 able to dress for a game, so that game was put on delay. Now, according to this report, testing was less available, and there were higher rates of false positives early in the pandemic. So there is some level of uncertainty as to how many players had true positive cases back in 2020, especially during the league's 3-month shutdown. Now, it is possible that some players who tested positive for the virus but were asymptomatic months ago were false positive. Some players have been tested for antibody levels to determine their level of immunity, but there currently is not a league-wide procedure in place to regularly test for those antibodies, and many of the players that are having those tests are doing so on their own, leading to potentially not being reported accurately to the NBA. As it stands right now, team and league doctors evaluate every positive test and player exposed on a case-by-case basis because the nature of the virus is still relatively uncertain, according to league officials. For example, players who have tested positive in the previous 90 days are handled differently than players who might have tested positive last summer because of the way the virus still might show up in their system. Lowe and Windhorst are reporting that the league office, NBA Players Association, teams, and agents have been in talks in recent days to consider protocol changes to limit the spread that has caused 3 games so far to be postponed, including those 2 last night. The league has already placed players who previously had the virus, Brooklyn's Kevin Durant and Miami's Bam Adebayo are 2 examples, into week-long health and safety quarantines after being exposed to an infected person over concern of reinfection or spreading the virus. According to current CDC guidance, the duration for immunity followed a COVID-19 infection, following a COVID-19 infection is not yet understood. Some reinfections based on knowledge of other coronaviruses are expected, but as of today, are believed to be rare situations. Now, over to the world of golf for just a second, for a little bit of changing up the story from the doom and gloom to this. Earlier today, the PGA Tour announced that it is planning on allowing a limited attendance at April's Masters Tournament in Augusta, Georgia. The tournament will institute similar health and safety standards to those in place when the event was won by Dustin Johnson back in November without spectators because of the coronavirus pandemic. Augusta National said that efforts are being made to include a limited number of patrons provided it can be done safely when the tournament kicks off April 8th through 11th. The club also announced that it intends to conduct the Augusta National Women's Amateur on April 3rd. They are also going to try to host the Drive, Chip, and Putt National Finals on April 4th, both events that were canceled in 2020. Fred Ridley, who is the chairman at Augusta National, said, quote, following the successful conduct of the Masters Tournament last November with only essential personnel, we are confident in our ability to responsibly invite a limited number of patrons to Augusta in April. As with the November Masters, we will implement practices and policies that will protect the health and safety of everyone in attendance. The club said it was in the process of contacting all ticket holders of record, and that refunds will be issued to those selected not to attend. So, NBA says that they are beginning to see players who have tested positive in the past test positive a second time for the coronavirus. But there is expected to be some level of bleed over from players who may have received a false positive test last spring in March when this whole thing started. Of course, over the summer when players were not together in the offseason, or the mini offseason, I guess. And then some players that tested positive during the bubble down in Orlando, Florida. The Masters says, hey, look, we think we can get away with this. I mean, if there is a more social distancing friendly sport than golf, I don't know what it is. They feel like they're going to be comfortable getting some limited number of patrons onto Augusta National coming up at the end of April when they run the next round of the Masters back at us. Look, it comes down to this as far as I am concerned, Lonzo. We watched the college football national championship game last night with only a few thousand fans in attendance down in Miami. We watched NFL divisional round playoff games this past weekend. Some stadiums completely empty, most of them only hosting a few thousand people, predominantly those who had already been vaccinated or healthcare workers, etc. We watched the Masters back in November. Very odd seeing Augusta without the tens of thousands of patrons that attend every day. We are very much, in a sports world, we are still very much in the thick of all of this. And I think the takeaway from last night's game is we are very, very fortunate that we have gotten the sports that we have gotten so far. And spring's just around the corner. We've got spring football this year. Remember, a lot of FCS divisions decided to let the FBS play out this fall, see how it was handled, and give a run at spring football. But without the NFL and without NCAA football to carry it, we are not out of the woods in the world of sports in the pandemic yet, Zoe.
We're not. And as far as NBA goes, I mean, there's no way they could go with a bubble for an entire season. It was one thing to do what they did with the playoffs and very successful, but there was no way they were going to do it for an entire season. So it's not really that surprising. And with golf, allowing some fans into, as far as NBA goes, I mean, there's no way they could go with a bubble for an entire season. It was one thing to do what they did with the playoffs and very successful, but there was no way they were going to do it for an entire season, so it's not really that surprising. And with golf, allowing some fans into golf, I think golf is the easiest one to transition into it. It really is, because you have less people in there. As long as you make sure that they keep their distance, you don't need to worry about it in golf the way you do in football. And I've got to admit, the last couple weeks in NFL and college football, just noticing the amount of fans in stands was surprising.
We've seen that in a couple of spots. Some of the NFL stadiums, I think Baltimore has been one of them, where they've had a healthy, not a huge number, but a healthy number of people in attendance. Like I said, I realized last night, and this is not something I've ever dealt with before, but I realized last night when I was watching that game, when it got to be around halftime, I realize, honestly, we're very fortunate to get what we have gotten so far. We're very lucky to have gotten what we've got so far. And I hope the NBA, which, of course, we are now just about to transfer. We got a couple more weeks of NFL football. We really flip over to almost full-time college basketball coverage. And there's a lot of good college basketball that I'm wanting to get into right now. Clemson's basketball program obviously on pause right now because of a positive test within the program. But leading up to that pause, Clemson basketball had been doing something under Jeff Brunau that I was very excited to see happen. They're finishing games. They're winning games. They're going out and they're playing teams that are good teams, and they're finding ways to finish games, which the last couple of years, as far as I've been able to tell, has been a pretty big concern for Clemson basketball fans. Clemson would find themselves in competitive games with good teams and then just not be able to finish, but they've been finishing games. So we're about to switch over to predominantly college basketball coverage moving forward, but we've still got obstacles that we need to overcome. I mean, again, look at the Cleveland Browns this weekend. They're playing without a couple of players and a head coach because of the coronavirus. Like we mentioned, Clemson basketball paused right now because of positives within their program. Ohio State last night. What do you guys, and I'm not saying it would have made any difference, so don't misconstrue this as me saying, oh, that, you know, without the Rona, it would have been different. I don't know that it would have. But Clemson was missing at least one of their best defensive tackles out there last night. Who knows if he was the difference in stopping Najee Harris coming across the line of scrimmage for so many of those short third and fourth down conversions. We are still in the thick of this thing. And I'm not talking politically. Don't take this and take it any further than it is. But as a sports-centered culture here on ESPN Upstate, we're very much still in the thick of this thing. And I'm hoping that we can all continue to work together to make it where we don't lose any more sports than we've already lost moving forward. College football obviously has a way of creating rifts between people. It has a way of getting people who would ordinarily be friends upset with each other, et cetera, et cetera. I have been looking for something in college football that I can say that would bring the world together, that would create, as we all look for a sense of unity heading into 2021, I have been looking for something that I could say that in no way could be taken as divisive, in no way could create a rift between me and listeners, between listeners and each other, between me and Zoe, between Zoe and listeners, between Zoe and anybody else, between me and anybody else. And I think that I have finally found the message that I can send that everybody will be on board with. I think what I am about to say is going to be the best call for unity that I can possibly come up with that will bring everybody together onto the same team. And Lonzo, here it is.
Wait. Let me roll tape.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is going to be profound, and you know, I want to save this for prosperity.
Absolutely. If there's ever a point in the future where anybody says Rob Brown is looking to create a rift and cause controversy amongst the masses, you will be able to point back to 1:24 in the afternoon on Tuesday, January 12th, and say, no, Rob created a call for unity and togetherness live on the show on ESPN Upstate. Here is that call. Ladies and gentlemen, the take I think we can all agree on, the take I think we can all be better for, the take I think we can all be on the same page together, here it is. College football's national championship being played on a Monday is stupid. I hate it, and we should never do it again, Lonzo.
I completely agree. College football is a Saturday night thing, and it should be a Saturday night thing.
College football's championship. When I am sitting on the couch on a Monday night at midnight, and I know that it wasn't midnight out on the left coast, I know that it wasn't midnight in the Rocky Mountains. I know it wasn't midnight across the Great Plains of the Northwest. I know that it wasn't midnight even in Central Time, just a stone's throw to our west. But it was after midnight here when trophies were finally being handed out. I know that there are many of you who are right now, as we speak, sitting at your desk across the upstate at work, or maybe more accurate, not sitting at your desk, sitting on the couch at home, telling your boss you're absolutely working when you're not. You're in pajama pants. You're in your robe. You got your feet kicked up on the coffee table. You're on Cup of Joe number 17 because college football played its national championship on a Monday night, well into the evening hours. Ladies and gentlemen, my call for unity is this. Let us find the next politician whose only platform is to move the college football national championship back to its rightful place on a Saturday night around these great United States, and let us all rally for the cause so that no longer are we trampled upon by the unjust tyranny of a Monday night national championship football game. Let us no longer cower in the face of the belief that playing that game on a Monday night is unavoidable. Ladies and gentlemen, I say to you, it is not. We can do better. We should do better. We will do better. The national championship game deserves to be on a Saturday night. It is college football's rightful place. And I will not stand for the dictators of college football who demand that we rally around our televisions late into a Monday evening and suffer the outrageous fortune of a Monday, Tuesday morning. Oh, man, I screwed up. I was giving a killer speech there, Alonzo, when I screwed it up.
It's my fault. I'm sorry I distracted you somehow.
Oh, I was in the middle of a killer speech, and I just blew it. Dang it. That's why I can't go into politics right there. The outrageous fortune that after banging back soda pops on a Monday night, we have to wake weary and red-eyed to pretend that we are ready for a full day of work on Tuesday, when for the vast majority of us, our team didn't even play on a Monday. Those in power wield their iron fist of control of the college football landscape over us. And ladies and gentlemen, I say to you, no more. No more will we sit by idly. Will we wait silently for that day, that glorious day to come when college football crowns its king, not on everyone's least favorite day, Monday, but instead over the weekend, where celebration and whiskey flow freely in the hands of the true fans of college football, we the people. There is my pledge to you, ladies and gentlemen, my undying promise that from this day forward, I will do all things in my power to ensure that the college football national championship returns to where it should be. To a celebration on a Saturday night. The celebration that we all deserve without it impacting us and forcing us to get mad at our boss on a Tuesday. Because all we want to do is bang down Pedialyte and Tylenol and feel better about ourselves. No, that is a Sunday morning activity. A Sunday after a celebration of college football on a Saturday night, where it deserves to be. I state my case, Lonzo.
Wow, I'm in awe. I had to hesitate there. I need to give it a little room to breathe. And you're absolutely right. I am behind you 100%. I'm sure the majority of the listeners are also. And you're wrong about messing up your speech because politicians do that all the time. I will be your campaign manager. We're going to win this thing.
I don't think they immediately stopped to point out how much of an idiot they made themselves just sound like, though. That's my thing.
Yeah, but everybody knows. So, I mean, it's refreshing that you pointed that out. I mean, that right there is part of our platform.
We admit when we are wrong, which is frequently. So, you know, what are you going to do? My mother just texted me, Lonzo, and said, if someone just tuned in for the first time, I bet they immediately tuned out. I thought that was a pretty damn good speech, if I may say so. That's off the top of my head, too, Lonzo. I didn't write that down. That was coming from the heart, man.
Yeah, I don't want to disagree with your mom because I don't like to do that. But it was impassioned. It was beautifully said, and we need more of that.
And it was like 78% serious, too. So, you know.
See, I thought it was at least 92, so you had me fooled.
Got you convinced. That makes me a good politician. Got college basketball. We got it for you live tomorrow. The Citadel taking on Furman, and we'll have that game live for you right here on ESPN Upstate. Tip time slated for 3:00. We will go live with our coverage at 2:30. So I'll have you tomorrow from noon to 2:30. 2:30, we'll kick it on over to Dan Scott and the boys. They'll take you all the way up through the end of the game at 5:30, and then Offsides with Mark Ryan and Diesel will pick up there at 5:30, taking you the rest of the way until 7. This weekend, we are wall-to-wall with NFL coverage. We will start with some more college basketball on Saturday from 3:30 to 6:30. We've got East Tennessee State taking on Furman. Then at 7:45, we'll kick you over to the end of the Baltimore-Buffalo game on Sunday. We're carrying both games for you at 2:30. Cleveland on the road at Kansas City, and then the Saints taking on Tampa Bay, the Brady v. Breeze matchup. It might be a retirement party for one of the, you know, I just thought about that. Zoe, we have a WWE-style retirement match going down in New Orleans this weekend with Brady v. Breeze, perhaps.
Well, this will hurt you, but I'm okay with the double retirement.
They just both quit? Yeah, end of the game? Just both go home?
Yeah. Declare it a tie. They're both done. Come on. You know Breeze is done after this year anyway. He's not going to play anymore. You don't think so?
As the great philosopher of our time, Taylor Swift once said, and the haters gonna hate. A very profound quote that I find entirely applicable here.
I don't hate Drew Brees. I'm just saying he is pretty much put it out there without actually putting it out there that he's done. So, yeah. I mean, you know, as far as Tom Brady, he hasn't, and I wish he would.
I don't think you're wrong at all, tell you the truth. I don't think you're wrong. I think this is it for Brees, and I think this is his send-off. He'd like to get by Brady for the last time. Again, the Saints and the Saints and Tom Brady this year. The Saints have gotten the better of Tom Brady and the Bucs. I mean, 38-3 in their second meeting, a big win in the Superdome way back in week one. But this thing is a different game. It's got a different feel to it this weekend. While we're talking about it, let's jump into our NFL games for divisional weekend, start to kind of break down some of the things that I expect that we will see on the field this weekend. We will open it up on Saturday. We've got the Rams taking on the Packers. This one's going to be at Green Bay. The sixth seed of L.A. is headed out to take on Aaron Rodgers and the crew. The big question mark here is going to be the health of Aaron Donald. I think the Rams defensive tackle is likely is going to be in the mix for a lot of player of the award type awards at the end of the year. Listen, Aaron Donald can disrupt any quarterback in the league. He's that good. And they will need him to do that to Aaron Rodgers. They will need to make Aaron Rodgers uncomfortable. He had a rib injury on Saturday against the Seahawks. But the Packers have to assume that they will be contending with a defense that is fully healthy around him. A defense, by the way, that allowed the fewest points per possession in the NFL this season. They gave up 1.46 points per possession, the lowest in the NFL. And what's interesting to me, I thought that honestly, Zoe, I thought sending Tampa up to Green Bay was likely the best way to knock Green Bay out of the postseason before the NFC Championship game would arrive. But the more I think about it, this Rams defense is stout behind Aaron Donald. You've got Ramsey back there in the back half, Jalen Ramsey defending the back part of the field. Two gangbusters on both sides Jalen Ramsey's going to have to lock down Davante Adams, and Aaron Donald is going to have to get to Aaron Rodgers and interrupt the timing between those two. If you ask me to pick a defensive line, defensive back combo that I thought had the best chance on the road at Lambeau to make that happen, it might very well be the LA Rams. If they can keep this a low-scoring game, I don't think the Rams are as far of a long shot as a lot of people think they are, especially after we saw they do on the road at Seattle this weekend.
Yeah, that defense looks awful good, and it's going to come down to, well, you'd like to say, well, who's the quarterback for the Rams? I don't think it matters. I mean, we're not picking yet, so I mean, the obvious way to lean would be Green Bay, but I think Green Bay will be concerned about the matchup with that Rams defense and what it means. Will Aaron Rodgers be comfortable back there? Probably not.
Now, the question mark for the Rams, of course, on the other side of the ball is going to be the offense, and this is where I think they are in a world of trouble. They have got two quarterbacks on the roster, Jared Goff, John Wolford, both of them are banged up. We saw Wolford taken out of the stadium last week in an ambulance after an apparent neck injury. Jared Goff clearly having some issues with that thumb on his throwing hand still. Neither one of those guys is 100%. And this weekend, they found out that Cooper Kupp, who has been, without question, maybe the biggest X-factor wide receiver in the NFL, has bursitis in his knee. The Rams offense scored an average of 12.7 points per game during the final 3 weeks of the regular season. Since week 13, the Packers have been giving up just a tick over 17 points per game. Question mark for me is 100% going to be, can the Rams run the football? It's up to Cam Akers. If Cam Akers, the former FSU guy, is able to have a big game, and Aaron Donald in the defense can slow up Green Bay's passing attack, then maybe the Rams have a chance. But I agree with you, Zoe. You got to be leading Packers at home in this one.
Yeah, I mean, especially as long as Aaron Rodgers is there and he's healthy, I mean, that's an advantage over just about any team they play.
Tampa Bay on the road at New Orleans in your other NFC divisional game here. The Saints, as we mentioned a couple of times, maybe a little bit of, you got to wonder if maybe overconfidence is a factor. The Saints didn't just sweep the NFC South, including the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but they owned the Buccaneers, outscored them by 26 between the two games. They also intercepted Tampa Bay quarterback Tom Brady 5 times this year, sacked him 6 times, and forced one Brady fumble out of the deal. The question mark here is, though, there's a lot of football cliches that we hear all the time. One of them, it's difficult to beat a team 3 times in a season. But does it change your opinion any that it's tough to beat a team 3 times in a season when you so soundly defeated that team the first 2 times?
I think it depends on the sport. In this case, in the NFL, I think it's not going to be that big of a deal for New Orleans. I don't think they're going to come in overconfident. I think they're going to go in and do work because that's what they did the first couple of times. It's just like coming to work and doing your job, and that's what they're going to do. They're going to take care of Tampa Bay the same way they did the last 2 times they played them.
During the last 5 weeks, all victories for Tampa Bay, they have averaged 35.8 points per game. Brady's been more comfortable in the past 3 games. Brady has averaged 145.7 passing yards just off of play action. I'm only giving you that stat because previous to those 3 games, he was averaging less than 65 yards per game on play action pass, which is a big part of Tampa's offense. They do get Devin White back, the former LSU Tiger, who was leading the team in tackle and sacks before he suffered a leg injury earlier in the year. Devin White has been reactivated off of the COVID-19 list after a couple of weeks missing. That's a big get back for Tampa Bay on the offensive side. But again, the defense of New Orleans has been a pain in the neck for Tom Brady this year. The Saints are built like a good matchup against the Buccaneers, look like a great matchup against Brady during the regular season. The Saints defense really good against the pass for most of the season, holding opposing quarterbacks to the 4th lowest QBR in the NFL and headed into their fourth consecutive playoff appearance. This year's team looks to be the most balanced. You know, over the I've had conversations with folks in other radio stations around the country talking NFL, and one of the things that seems a lot of people hear New Orleans Saints and they think dynamic passing attack, right? That's been the MO of the Saints for the past handful of years. That ain't it this year. This team is not a dynamic passing team. They're good when Kamara's coming out of the backfield, when Mike Thomas is healthy. We saw him pick up that first touchdown of the game last weekend on his first game back with Drew Brees in a number of weeks. They are a tough matchup for Tampa Bay here, but this is Tom Brady in the playoffs. This is not a spot where he's used to failure. This game, as we talk X factors here, this game to Mizzo, it's all about Alvin Kamara. It's all about Alvin Kamara. Tampa Bay led the NFL in allowing less than 3.7 yards per carry this year, held Kamara to 56 yards on 21 carries in both games of the regular season. If Kamara can have a better game, Saints win. If they lock him up again, Tom Brady's going to make a case for the GOAT one more time.
Wow. I can't believe you're going there. Kamara's going to have a great game. And look, Tampa Bay struggled last week with the Washington football team. Taylor Heinicke outplayed Tom Brady. If Heinicke, he looked really good, can outplay Tom Brady, what's Drew Brees going to do this week?
Good question. But again, this team has not been carried by Drew Brees. It's been carried by the defense. It was the defense that carried them last week against the Chicago Bears.
I just want to point out how you're trying to not be a homer. You're trying to not be that guy. And I know you're enjoying everything that I'm saying about your team, the New Orleans Saints.
For the record, though, I'm not trying to be a homer. I am successfully not being a homer, if I may say so myself.
Okay.
Zoe had a brilliant idea during the break that I am going to 100%, I think, take and utilize from a sports angle. And that is to get a licensed psychologist on the line to talk about things that we see through the prism of our topic of choice. In Zoe's case, it was video games. And in this case, it'd be sports. I think it would be really interesting to get a licensed psychologist on the line and talk to them about the way, especially after the conversation we had yesterday regarding people putting televisions and chairs and ladders through television screens because of an L that they took in their sport and team of choice. I think it would be kind of interesting to talk to a licensed therapist or psychologist about the processes that go on inside of the human brain, all of the chemical and neurological processes that happen within our brains when we are watching sports, but also when we're reacting to sports, right? Over the weekend, I was an unapologetic Cleveland Browns fan when they were playing the Steelers. One, because y'all, I'm a lifelong Saints fan. I am programmed to root for the underdogs. But two, because I picked the Browns to win in an upset on the radio and I wanted to look good when we came in here on Monday, which we did, by the way. 6-0, you're welcome. Anyway, I think it'd be kind of interesting, Zoe, to get a licensed psychologist or therapist in here to talk to us about the way that the human brain interacts with sports on a deeper level than we like when our team wins and we don't like when our team loses. I think that's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, because I'd be curious to find out if all sports fans are wired a certain way. If you are born with a certain, I don't know, chemical imbalance or something that makes you, when you are for something, go overboard about that to the point where your emotions can drive you to do things that you shouldn't do.
Yeah, but see, I think that that's interesting because I think, let me phrase that. And again, not a licensed psychologist, nor did I stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night. I think we all have some element of our life that we do that in, right? Whether it's love and romance, whether it's professionally and career motivated, whether it's video games or television shows or sports, we all have that thing that we get to a point where our emotion ends up ruling over our reason. And we do things that days or weeks or months or years later, we look back and we go, what the hell, man? Like, it was so obvious that that was a bad decision at the time, but I looked right past it. I mean, look, that's here. I'll pull the curtain back a little bit. That's me with most of the romantic relationships I've had in my life, that I look back and I'm like, the hell was I doing, man? Like, what was I doing? The red flag, there was a forest of red flags, and I just waded through all of them like it was nothing. We spent some time yesterday talking about the guys who are putting ladders and chairs through their television sets after their teams lose a playoff game. And people start going, what in the world are they doing? But to them in that moment, it makes perfect sense because they're being guided by passion and emotion instead of thought and logic and reason. I think it'd be really interesting to talk to a licensed professional and ask, what is it that creates that level of reaction from us, some of us, when things in sports don't go our way, especially those of us that take an L and they're one of those people that, you know, their NFL team loses in the playoffs and they can't get over it until 2 or 3 weeks later, you know?
Yeah, and I'd also like to know if there's a way to temper, a way to dial it back just enough to where it doesn't affect you in the way you just talked about.
Yeah. I mean, look, I remember back when the Saints lost the trip to the Super Bowl because of that missed obvious pass interference call in the NFC Championship game against the Rams that sent the Rams to the Super Bowl to get absolutely slaughtered by the Patriots. And yes, I did take deep delight in that Super Bowl. But, you know, 2 or 3 days after that, I was at a point where even family members were like, Rob, you got to stop, dude. It was a football game. Like, nah, yeah, no, but I only got one Super Bowl in my life. I won another one, and we got the opportunity robbed from us. How are we supposed to deal with that? I think I'm going to look into setting that up